Brad Tree Living's, I guess, exit media conference about to take place. The journalists are settling in. The big bad Toronto media sharpening their knives, getting ready to ask all the toughest questions. The PR people are setting up the microphones, getting his papers in order. The papers that I never really see the people at the podium use or seem to reference, but either way, they're always there. Yeah, this is, again, I keep saying it because they keep saying it. This is Brad Tree Living's hockey team. There is no more, hey, can a guy nix a trade? It's simply, what does Brad think? And my understanding of Keith Pelley is that he's called himself a sounding board. He's said he doesn't view himself as like a hockey guy, even though he is a hockey fan and who played the sport. But a sounding board to Brad Tree Living's ideas. Someone who will communicate things to the board to make sure that it happens. So here it is, the very beginning of the Brad Tree Living era. Let's see how it starts.
I want to first off speak about Brendan, obviously. There's been change here over the course of the last few days, and it's been a difficult few days. I think, Brendan was, Brendan's the person that brought me in here. I really enjoyed my time with Brendan. We had a strong working relationship that grew into a real strong friendship. Enjoyed our chats, enjoyed all the interaction that I had with him. And as I, from my view, Brendan did a lot of good things here. He did a lot of good things with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think he built a real solid foundation. And I want to wish him, Catherine, and his family all the very best. He's a good man. I wish him well. There'll be a next challenge for him, wherever he chooses that to be. And it's a friendship that I'll maintain moving forward. So I just wanted to mention that off the top. I just wanted to quickly kind of go through and give you a little bit of a recap from my eyes. The start at the end, and I'll get to there, but we fell short of where we wanted to be. And we fell short of where I thought we could be. Really, this season started, if you look at it back to last summer, we made a change and brought in Craig. And really, the thought process behind that before bringing in the coach was I felt there was a style of play that we needed to get to. It's a style of play that I feel gives you the best chance to have success. We're seeing it. We see it. We saw it last night. We're seeing it in the playoffs. We see it prevalent in our division. It's a direct style. It's a style that I think you have to become a forechecking team. I think you have to limit risk. There is always risk in this game, but trying to reduce risk, and I think that gives you the best chance to win at the most important time. So with that thought, went through the process and found what I believe was the right coach to coach this team, and I'm proud of the work that Craig and his staff did this year. There's a lot that goes into changing how you play, and I think the team did a really good job with that. The next area that we really focused on last summer was our defense. Chris Tanev, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Yanni Hakanpaa, Philip Myers, and then at the trade deadline, Brandon Carlo. I feel that we wanted to have a long defense, rangy defense, make it hard around our net, and a defending defense. You need to move pucks, and that's an area that we got to continue to improve in. And I think all those players had a positive impact. Obviously, in Yanni's case, we knew going into the summer, in talking to him, that there was risk. And we went through that process and we took a swing and it didn't work out. But we'll always continue to look at if there's times to take swings, we're going to try to take swings. It didn't work out. But I think that defense and those guys, even in Philip Myers' case, in the role that he played for our team, did a really good job. We then looked at our goaltending, made a decision to move on from Samsonov last year. We feel we've got a real developing young goaltender in Joe Wall. But looked at it and saying we need to partner him with, in a tandem with somebody. And we brought in Stoli. And I thought together they were excellent. And they both had their own individual times where they went on runs. Both at certain points. Obviously, Anthony had the injury a couple of months, 2.5 months or so that he was out, and Joe carried the mail for us. So I thought that was a positive for us. There was a good partnership. And then supplementing the forward group. You're not going to overhaul your team. You make decisions where you're going to spend your cap dollars. But we wanted to, again, add some players that would try to fit in the style that we wanted to play, and bringing in Max Pacioretty, Steven Lorenzen, and at the deadline, Scotty Lawton, I thought fit well into our group. There's ups and downs in a season. There's adversity in every season. As I talked about, I thought our team was real committed in terms of their work ethic, in terms of their buy-in, in terms of changing how they play. And there's lots of positives in the regular season. We overcame a lot of injuries, specifically up front, and then obviously with Anthony in the net. 108 points, the Atlantic Division regular season title, I think fourth overall, and set a record for most road wins for the franchise. Our focus isn't in regular season success, but I think it has to be recognized, and I want to recognize the players and the staff for their work in there. There's mile markers in a season when you're trying to determine where your team's at. Are you ready to win? Two for me that kind of, stood out as we were going through the season was both in and out of the Four Nations. February was a difficult month for us for travel-wise. We went out west just before the Four Nations. Did I say Four Seasons? I meant Four Nations. The Four Nations, and then coming out of the Four Nations, we had a home game against Carolina. We're back on the road, and in both cases, going in and coming out, I liked where our team was at. And then down the stretch, 13-2-1 down the stretch, I thought we were prepared. We had prepared ourselves to go into the playoffs. The playoffs. I always look at three things in the playoffs. The most important thing in the playoffs is critical moments. And we can sit here and debate, and we'll arm wrestle over different where you think critical moments are in series, but I think it's starting of series. It's tough to chase a series, so the start of a series. Critical games within a series, and then closing out games, or closing out series, finishing games. Round one, we played a real good team in Ottawa. That's a good team. I don't think they got enough credit. They've been building for a while. They've done a really good job there. It was a very good opponent. We had a good start in that series. Won two at home. Tight game in game three. Win an overtime game. We were poor in game five. Critical game. It's a critical game. We were poor in game five. Give our guys a lot of credit in game six. Winning a tight game on the road to close out a series in another critical game. So credit to the guys in that series. The Florida series. And first, I want to give a lot of credit to Florida. I haven't had a chance publicly to say there's a reason why they're the champion. There's a reason why they're going back again for their third crack at it. They've set the bar in our division. They've set the bar in the league. And that's what we aspire to. We come back to those critical moments again. We had a good start. I know we all talk about 5-7, and we'll get to that. I believe a big moment in that series is game three. You're playing against the Stanley Cup champions. You got a chance to get them on the mat. We're up 2-0. We're up 3-1. Critical moment. We weren't able to close that out. It's not to close out the series, but a 3-0 lead is we know what the odds are and the percentages there if we were to get ourselves in that position. We're still in a series. It's 2-1. You're playing against the champs. Game five here. Critical moment. Series is tied. We weren't good enough. We weren't good enough in the moment. We go to game six. All the credit to the staff, the players. They win a big game six on the road. And then we come back for game seven. And that series is going to stay with me for a long time. The way it ended will stay with me for a long time. It would stay with me if it was 2-1 in triple overtime. When you think you have a chance to win and you don't, it stays with you. But as I review this and as it dovetails now into, and I apologize for being long-winded, into how we go forward, I first give a lot of credit to Florida. Your opponent and the enemy has a say in things. And if you look at that critical moment in Game 7, I don't care if you're playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs, if you're playing in the whatever sport, you're playing in the Masters, you're in your own business. Champions have the ability to be calm and at their very best when it matters the most. And that is an area that we've got to improve in. I think there has been steps. I know the history. I've been here for 2 years. We lost a game seven in game one. We lost a game seven, or in round one, lost a game seven in round two. I know what's happened before as well. But we have to be able to find a way to push through at the most critical moments. And that's the challenge in front of us. Moving forward, we have a good team. We've changed. We've changed a lot in the last 12 months. There will be change moving forward. That's just the nature of the business. No team comes back the same. We have to prepare. And not all change, might I add, is personnel. There'll be changes in personnel. I think we've changed a little bit. I talked about how we play. We've got to continue to change and evolve our mindset. And we've got to find a way to create the team, both between the ears, personnel, to be our very best at the most critical moments. There's some DNA that has to change in our team. That's one thing that I found. If you keep getting to the same result, and that's not to dismiss a lot of the good that happened up into it, when you keep getting the same result, there's some DNA that needs to change. And so that's on me now going forward and our staff. Although we've been done for a little bit, we've just now started. I've talked about the changes that have happened in the organization the last few days. We've now started the planning, and it's early for putting together our team for 25-26. Our schedule going forward right now, we just starting our pro scouting meetings. It's the first time to get together now with our staff and evaluate our team. Moving forward, changes that need to be made. We'll then go to the combine next week. We have the draft coming up, and we'll begin the process for the 25-26 season. And that change that I talk about at these moments, the one thing I do want to add, it's not, as I said, that game seven is going to live with me. I really felt there's times you're worried about where the team's at. I felt really good. I felt really good in that morning. Just the vibe around the team. And then we had the result we had. So that's the challenge that's in front of us. With that, I'll open it up to any questions.
Please raise your hands here. We'll start with Jonas and then Pierre.
Jonas, sorry. What does it mean to change the DNA of the group, and how do you do that?
It's a good question, Jonas. To me, when it matters the most, you have to embrace it. You know, you have to embrace it. With all the things that are the challenges in front of you, a good opponent, the stage, what's at stake, you've got to find a way to embrace that moment and ultimately succeed in it, right? The margins are thin. You know, the margins are really, really thin. And when I say that, it's not, I don't believe that you have to go and change 20 players, right? It's not always about that. It's what can we do to help our guys? What can we do to find guys that can help? If there is change that we need to make with the team, how do we bring people in that have a mindset like that? But it's those big moments of really embracing it, but finding a way, whatever that way is, to get through it and have success. And you know, let's be honest, we've gotten to that point. And I know we clumped the whole group together for the last number of years. There's been a lot of change, right? Like this team this year had a lot of change from last year. But we've got to, when you run up against that wall, and it happens time and time again, that leaves some scars. So there's experience that you get from that, and the more times you go through things. But ultimately, sometimes you may have to change something. And those are the things that we have to continue to look at. And I don't have the answers today. And it's not for me to be cute with you guys or deflect. We're in that process right now of asking these questions of ourselves, right? How do we get there? We're in an emotional business. Our fans are emotional. I'm emotional. Nobody wears it harder than me. That's what makes this place so great. But you have to step back, you have to exhale, and then you have to make calculated decisions based upon the best information you have. I don't know if that answered the question, but it seemed like I talked for a long time.
Next question, Pierre.
Brad, when we heard from Keith Pelly last Friday, he said he was looking forward to having dinner with you, I think, on Sunday and digging in on some meetings with you. Your day-to-day work life now has changed, Brendan gone. What did you hope to hear in those meetings with Keith, and what can you share with us about what this means now for you?
Yeah. Well, big picture, Pierre, not a whole lot changes for me. Right, my job responsibilities remain with what my job responsibility is, in charge of the hockey team, right? Obviously, without Brendan there, I will be working closer with Keith. As we talked about, had a relationship with Keith, but didn't, you know, Keith and I we're starting that now. We didn't spend a whole lot of time together. So like any relationship, we're going to find our cadence. Keith's made it very clear, you know, your job is to go out and do the things that you see fit with your staff to get the team where we want it to go. So ultimately, you know, we're going to work through that a little bit. There's probably going to be a little bit of tweaks in terms of how things operate a little bit. But by and large, what I'm responsible for and where my energies are directed aren't going to change a whole lot, and that's building the hockey team.
Okay. Terry?
Hey, Brad.
Hey, Terry.
How are you?
Good, you?
Good. So Mitch Marner has been a large part of this team's DNA in the regular season and what it's been able to do, obviously. A large part of the team's DNA in the playoffs in the past several years that hasn't been able to get past that next step, like you say. Can he be a part of this going forward then? Do you want to re-sign Mitch? What are your thoughts on him and his possible future with the team?
Well, I'm shocked we got to question three before we got it. So thank you, Terry. And again, this isn't a deflection. I think Mitch is a tremendous player. We've talked throughout the year. You've heard me speak it. I think he's a star. We're in that process right now. I had a meeting with all the players individually. We do our exit meetings. Mitch and I had a discussion. It's emotional right now, right? And so my discussion with Mitch is, let's all take a step back. Let's take a deep breath. I got to decompress a little bit. We probably got delayed. That's not the right word. With Brendan's situation, you know, that was a bit of a curveball that just it took a couple days here to kind of get through. So we're going to meet as a staff. I'm going to be in touch with Mitch's representative and all of our players' representative, and determine what's best. Right now, Mitch has a say in this as well, right? So this isn't the world according to Brad. I think he's a great player. He's been a great player here. We'll have to see. We'll have to see how this all works. Can I think Mitch can succeed? Yes, I do. But as I said before, we've all got to kind of take a step back and look at, you know, we can't be rigid in our thought process of saying we can only do something one way. And like I said, he's got a say in the process. So again, another wordy answer to say, we'll see. And same thing with John, you know, and really all of our UFAs, right? Really good players. I'm a huge John Tavares fan. Had a really good discussion with him. We gotta take a step back, meet with our group. How do we best move forward? What are the costs? What is all those things that go into a contract and everything else? And how does it fit within the puzzle? So we'll see how that happens over the course of the next couple of weeks.
Luke.
Austin Matthews says he'll be 100% for training camp. If his injury occurred in last training camp and a few months of treatment and recovery could get him right, why wasn't he given that time in season so he would be 100% for playoffs?
Now, Luke, you would get mad at me when we always said day-to-day, and it became more than day-to-day, right? He's... And I think Austin spoke to you guys, right, and talked about it. First thing I would say with injuries, I'm not a big believer in just going down the list. I do think it's personal for each guy. Some guys, that's just their personal. We have guys playing through things, as everybody does. In Austin's case, he injured himself in camp. Now, again, we're never going to put a player in a position where it's going to make it worse. He worked through it. Now, that's not a case of us saying, Austin, get out there and make it worse. He got time. When we said it was day-to-day, really believe that. Now, is that 2 days? We'll see how it feels on the third day. In a couple of cases, it progressed. He was able to play through it. You know, when he came back and started playing from times off, it was better. There'd be times it would flare up. He was able to play with it. It's like I said, it wasn't something that we felt by playing he was going to put himself in a really bad position, short or long term. But with anything that's in that you're dealing with, it takes away some stuff. I give Austin all the credit in the world. I thought he had a really good year in terms of his first year of being a captain. And part of that, you know, unless you have something that's happened previously, everybody feels great day one of camp, and then you feel less great every single day from that. So everybody's playing through stuff. We were never going to put him in a position where he's playing through something that became worse and worse and worse. We managed it through the year. But did it have an effect? Certain times it certainly did. But I think he, even seeing how his game evolved, he found a way to be a really, really important top player. It's a credit to Austin. I thought he was terrific.
Steve?
Brad, you mentioned mindset in your speech a little earlier. And I want to go back to game 7 against Florida for a second, because you come out horribly to start the game, and then you kind of, in the last 10 minutes of the first period, recapture yourself, so to speak. To start the second period, do you have any explanation as to what happened from that moment to the game then being lost? It seemed like after coming back in the first period, you completely lost yourself after that.
Yeah, I've, as you can imagine, replayed that game a few times. I think there was a real It reminded me of a game I was in. I talked to Shane Doan about it. I don't know which year it was, but we were in Arizona and we played Detroit in game seven. We had won a Sunday afternoon game, I think it was, or an afternoon game in Detroit in game six, came back for game seven. And you're all fired up for game seven, and one team looked like they were completely comfortable in the situation, and the other team didn't. I thought we survived. I thought they came out. I know the shot attempts and all that stuff were one-sided. I didn't think we gave up a lot of grade A stuff. We found our footing, killed a penalty right at the end of the first period. Well, even before that, I thought from the 10-minute mark on, we were carrying play. We had some grade A chance. We had some breakaways. I thought the turning point there, Steve, was, and this is where I come back to it, was the first goal. I thought when the first goal happened, we almost looked like a team that it was 4-0, right? It's being able to find your footing. It's being able to know, as we talk about all the time, it's like within a series. You park it and you move on to the next one. We did. There was a tension. There was a, and I'll never question the want, the care. These guys want it. They want to be successful. They want to get to where we all want to get to. But at that point, it looked like a team that was more comfortable. One team looked more comfortable than the other in the situation. And there's more things that we can talk about, in the nuances of the game and in terms of our team structure, in terms of position, all that sort of stuff. But from the 10,000-foot view, when it became 1-0, I felt there was a real tightness of our team. There was a real tightness in the moment. And like I said, champions are the calmest at the most critical time. And that's an area that we've got to get through.
Dave McCarthy.
Hey, Brad. You talked about the ability to perform in critical areas of the series. When you look at Matt Nyes's play this year, how would you evaluate his ability to perform in those crucial points in series? And as it relates to his contract, what is the hope that you'd be able to resolve it prior to July 1st?
Second part first, Dave. Hopefully I say this all the time. I like to get it done as soon as possible. Usually term and money are the only two issues that come into play on contract negotiations. So listen, I thought Matthew had a tremendous year, right? He we're sort of seeing him evolve in front of our eyes. I thought he took a step from being, and it's a big step for a young player to become a really important player, right? Like, you can be a good player and have a role. He became a really important player. Matthew had an injury in game six, got hurt in game six. Was it game six? Game six in Florida, muscled through it. That wasn't 100% Matthew Nyes in game seven, right? Like, he was muscling through it. But I thought he was really good. For a guy who hasn't been through that, this is his second full year. I thought he was really good. He was an impactful player. I think of the breakaway in game four, I think it was. They're shorthanded, right? Matthew's a big part of the future moving forward.
Chris Johnson.
Hey, Brad. Down front.
Chris.
Mitch has had several chances this year to say he wants to stay in Toronto and has yet to do so, including last week. I'm just wondering, if that doesn't change and he's walked out the door, how do you ensure that this team doesn't take a step back without him?
Good question, right? It's there's not a hockey tree out there that you just go and pluck the player off of. Our job is to make the team look at all the options. that's what we got to go through here right now. I can't sit here and give you a definitive answer. We've got to, number one, go through the process with Mitch, right? Our staff is in the process now of looking at all different outcomes. But we've got to kind of drive what we think is the best outcome. And like I said, in Mitch's case, he's got a say in the matter. I don't think, you know, you're not necessarily, if that was the outcome, and we'll see where this goes, I don't think you're just going out and saying, okay, let's go get this player and he replaces Mitch. Maybe that's where I talked about we have to change a little bit, right? We have to change the makeup of the team. But that's speculation right now. That's hypotheticals that I don't like to necessarily get into. So we'll see is the answer. And again, it's not trying to be elusive as much as it, you have to try to prepare for every potential outcome. And it, you know, I said all thing, and it may take some time. You know, it may take some time to figure out the best way that we move forward. But that's what we're in the process of doing right now.
David Alter.
Hey, Brad.
David, how are you?
Good, how are you? With Brendan no longer part of the structure here, I'm just wondering for you, you've been in the job 2 years now, are things more streamlined for you? How do you envision things might look front-facing different in this position now without Brendan? In terms of just like getting any trades clear or anything like that, or just how you do your job on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, not a lot different, David. Obviously, you know, the bricks and mortars of the business, you know, of going out and evaluating players and evaluating staff and building your team, and those things don't change, right? There's a different reporting structure where I would report to Brendan. I will now report to Keith, so that's different. And like I said, Keith and I have had some good discussions over the last couple of days. I do apologize. Part of this delay was on me. I had a daughter that was graduating that was important to get back for. So that cost us a couple of days. So that part is a little bit different. But again, a lot of what I do isn't necessarily going to change. You know, it's what 31 other managers do, right? You're in charge of the team and all the facets and the things that operate around the team, and that's what I'll continue to do.
Matt Larkin, top row.
Hey, Brent.
Over here.
Hey, Matt. How you doing?
Good.
As you said earlier, you know, this team obviously did get much harder to play against on defense, much bigger. At the end of the second round, led the league in blocks as a team. But if you spin that differently, you're blocking a lot of shots because you don't have the puck. And this team was outchanced in every single game it played in the playoffs. If you look at that D core, I know everyone is re-signed. I think I count up to 7 NHL caliber defensemen signed through next year and beyond. But given the trouble clearing the zone and the tendency to get hemmed in a lot during the postseason, do you anticipate any possible changes personnel to that decoy?
Well, two things I'd say, Matt, is you're not wrong. I would say to that is, in terms of changes with we don't know, right? Like, we don't know. It's too early. You know, Craig and I are talking a lot now about there's some tweaks that we can make too, right? Like, I think in today's game, again, I like the length of our defense. I like the makeup of our defense, but you still got to be able to get up and down the ice, right? We, you know, I think there's things that we can do in terms of closing quicker and taking away space. And part of how we played will lend itself to, you know, will lend itself to you're giving up some volume. The idea is you're going to give up a little volume. You're going to take away the grade A's, right? What we think is the most dangerous chances, right? Now, that's part of what we'll do this summer is we'll sit and talk about it. Still think in today's game you need your D to be active, right? we need to get more offense from our defense. Now, not just goals, but creating, right? So part of that, and I think there's some other guys that are able, it's not necessarily going out and turning guys into 20 goal scorers, but we can maybe get some more volume the other way. But in terms of personnel, we'll see. You know, I like the decor, but we can't be rigid, right? We fell short. We have to continue to look at ways we can get better.
We're going to do three more questions. Mark Masters, Sean Leathong, and Josh Cloak.
Brad, last week, Keith Pelt mentioned he felt the culture had changed quite a bit under Craig Berube. How would you describe the change you saw in the team's culture this season, and how much more room do you feel there?
No, culture is a, you know, we hear that a lot, right? Culture. To me, it's habits, right? What is culture? Culture is what you do every day, right? What you value, right? That I can tell you, coming in here, I think that to me had never been an issue necessarily. I think there has been some changes, and when I say never been an issue, this is a group I've never felt they didn't give you an honest day's work. They weren't committed to their craft. I mean, we've got guys that, our guys are very committed to preparing, doing things the right way. I think Craig has got a real good way about him. I mean, it's a very workmanlike atmosphere. A lot of you are at practice most days. It's they work. And I think he's really done a really good job of building team. I mean, that's what we're trying to do here is it is about the team. Regardless of, you know, we've got some really, really good players. It's about team success. And I know our guys are bought into that. They want to have it. They're committed to it. We got to find a way for us to push over the top.
Sean.
Right over here. To go back to contract talks, you've spoken in support of John Tavares, Mitch Marner. Can you say for certain both players will be offered contracts before July 1st?
No, as I said before, we're going through that process right now.
Last question, Josh Cole.
Brad, you've got the over here, Brad.
Oh, there you are.
How are you? We've got the draft next month. What have you learned about the way Mark Leach operates ahead of the draft, and how is he kind of different from his predecessor, Wes Clark?
Mark's a really experienced guy. I've really enjoyed the year. Now, sometimes I have to give myself a wide berth around Mark because, you know, we'll meet, he'll leave, and then I'll trade one of his draft picks. So that makes him really excited. Very detailed. I don't know if it changes a whole lot, to be honest with you, Josh. Like very, very. The area scouts. There's a lot of responsibility placed on them. Mark is very. Mark's very knowledgeable going into, you know, the top level that you get into the top 90. Mark is very, knows those players real well, right? And really includes and pushes the area scouts for their involvement and gives them a lot of responsibility as the draft moves on. But I've really enjoyed my time with Leachy. You know, he's got a hell of a draft record, and I joke about the pick there, but he puts value on every pick, you know. And I know that sounds like, you know, everybody should, but whether it's a pick in the fourth or a pick in the seventh or you got whatever you've got, that his feeling is there's players to be found at every round, and his history has shown that.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you, everybody. Brad will be available for brief scrums off to the side. It's a little tight, I apologize, but thanks, everybody.
Okay, there he was, Brad Treliving. A 15-minute open monologue and then 30 minutes of questions. My first thought is you're never going to get it the way that you really want it with these things. Like, there's literally been a Masai one, and it was after 2018 that I thought was like, damn, this is fire. This is like full cards on the table stuff. But outside of that, I really can't remember a media conference where someone just like laid all the cards on the table and didn't do some PR answering. And there was some of that. But overall, I got to say, I thought that there was actually some indicative stuff here. So I before we started this, and I'll dig in on this more tomorrow when I have a little bit more time to do it, but I wrote down a lot. So that tells me that I have a decent chunk out of this. Before Brad went on, I said that there were a few markers that I really wanted to hear about. One of them was, how are you different from Brendan Shanahan? And I don't think that we really got that answer. I'm not even, like, he was asked about his day-to-day and how that changes and whatever, but it didn't seem like a guy who really made his stamp in terms of what he believes to be the different thing. Because Brendan Shanahan talked about killer instinct, and that's just a different way of talking about what Brad did today, which is, in the biggest moments, you got to find ways to persevere. Killer instinct, that's just a synonym for killer instinct. So that felt overly familiar for me. If I'm just being honest, raw honest, I'm coming off of this right now, and I don't really care to hear that anymore, because we get it. Everybody with eyes gets it. Your team has failed over and over and over, and whatever. We can parse on the whole your team thing, given it's been 2 years of Brad Treliving and Shanahan was there for one, whatever. Everybody has seen and everybody understands, literally everyone understands that you guys choke in big moments. So there was an important question to be asked and answer to be had as to his approach when it comes to that versus what Shanahan's was. Shanahan's approach very much seemed to be that it was going to be run it. So now we get to go between the lines, right? We get to read between the lines, or I get to use some of the answers to piece together something that works in terms of projecting what that could be moving forward. Because he did the thing. He's like, first of all, credit to the Panthers. I went, yeah, I get it. The Panthers are good. Everybody gets that. I don't need to hear it. I want to hear what it is about them that you feel is so different from your group. Not that you're giving them respect. What it is about them where they are allowed to be so calm in those moments, how they have cultivated the calmness in those moments versus how you have not been able to cultivate the calmness in those moments. Because I thought it was revealing when he said, hey, we went down a goal. I thought that was transparent. We went down a goal and it felt like we were down four. That to me was real. And to be fair, the question was very direct. And so I went, yeah, that's good. That's a good way to do it. Everybody saw that tightness. They did. They tightened up. The Panthers are amazing, but this is what gets lost in this whole stupid run it back conversation that keeps happening. It's not just about how good the Panthers were. It's how bad you looked, too. It's how bad you looked when the chips were down. And so still the big curiosity point moving forward that I guess we're not going to get full clarity on until we see some moves or until we see it in action. We're not going to get the words to describe it. How this shift is more than just we're blaming Brendan Shanahan. Here's the scapegoat. He's gone. Things stay the same. Because I agree with him that this team did take steps under Craig Berube. I think a lot of people would. And it sure felt that way during the regular season in terms of, oh, maybe these guys are going to be able to step up in bigger moments. Hey, they really do play a different kind of game. They seem bought in. But then, as Brad mentioned, when you keep running up against the same thing over and over again, yeah, it can be experience, but it can also lead to scars. It was all scars, baby. It was scars. We didn't see a lot of experience in game 7. We didn't see a lot of experience in game 5. We saw scars. So still to me, the big remaining question that I, again, this is just the stuff I wanted going into it, was what is it about you and Shanahan that is different in terms of approach with a team? Probably wasn't going to sewer him. Don't think that he was going to say, well, where I thought Brandon failed. No. But there's diplomatic ways of doing it. And I'm not really sure that that got addressed. Two, was I wanted to hear about the free agents. And clearly, again, they had 2 weeks to prepare these answers. And I thought that those were interesting. I really did. And here's why. Mitch Marner, as was outlined by, I think it was Masters or... I forget who asked the question. Who cares? But somebody said, hey, Marner's had multiple weeks to say that he wants to be a Toronto Maple Leaf and he hasn't done it. He won't do it. And this is going back to the interview that Jonas Siegel got ahead of the trade deadline. Like, hey, do you want to be a Maple Leaf? And he wouldn't just answer the question directly. And I thought Brad's answers with Marner were pretty telling. One is, when you're talking about the DNA and why you come up short and all these different things, it's hard for me to believe that he really believes in that DNA answer, that it's not the core. The core is the main DNA of this team. The idea that it's like they would be swapping out a winger, right? Like, oh, we'll be upgraded on Max Pacioretty, or we upgraded on Nick Robertson. Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't seem like DNA to me. DNA to me implies something of significance. So that's the only way I can read it. Now, we did go from everything's on the table to this, so it has been done before. But the most instructive part of the Marner conversation that I thought was had today was the things that Brad didn't say. Unless I'm missing it, and I was writing down a lot of notes, I missed the part where he said, we want Mitch Marner back. Our goal is to re-sign Mitch Marner. I didn't hear any of that. I heard a lot of, we'll see how it goes, and that this is a lot of Mitch's decision too. He said that in his exit interview with Mitch Marner, that they had a discussion, it was emotional, and that they would take a step back and take a deep breath. Take a step back and take a deep breath implies to me, as someone who has had emotional conversations with people where they end that way, that where you are in the heat of that moment is not the best place. And nobody really thinks that it is in the best place, right? But we've gone from, hey, Marner's leaving 99%, hey, he's gone, to little whispers from the people that whisper about the Marner camp that, hey, don't close the door just yet. And for an organization that has been very reluctant to make change, and from a general manager that lost Johnny Gaudreau to free agency and was outspoken about how he learned from that and he never wants to have that happen again, where you lose a premier player for nothing, you at least have to be open to the possibility. And hey, maybe Marner's market is not what we think it's going to be. Like, I think a lot of teams are going to have interest, but are all of them going to be interested at $13.5-14 million? I don't think so. I don't think so. Or whatever it is in a tax-free state, the offer from a Vegas, for example. But the fact that he didn't come out and stone cold say, like with Matthew Knies, for example, and I know it's an RFA versus a UFA, there's a lot of differentiators there, of course. But he said, Matthew Knies is a big part of our future. And you could have even simply, like from a PR standpoint, you could have gone like, Mitch Marner has been a great Toronto Maple Leaf and we want him to remain so. And then if it doesn't go that way privately, like who cares? No one's going to be mad at you because people are clamoring for change. So I did think it was fairly interesting that there was none of that. It was the responses were very much like, he's a tremendous player. He's a star. But we're in the process. I thought that was telling. We'll see. We'll see if I'm right. But I thought that was telling to potentially the evolution of a mindset of what has been a front office over years past that has completely capitulated to its core let's say three, because Tavares was different. He came in as a free agent and didn't sign another contract. But to those three guys in particular, it went from we can and we will. It went from that to making sure Nylander came back for half a season instead of making him sit out. It went from Marner misses one day of camp and boom, he's got a massive contract, something that was way out of whack with what everybody thought it was going to be. Went from, hey, things got done quickly with Matthews, 4 years, cool, done. Nylander, cool, done. You had a good season. Here you go. More of a cap percentage than David Pastrnak. To being pretty noncommittal about the future of a star. And multiple references to this is on Mitch as well, trying to suggest to the fact that, hey, this guy is very much on the fence, and the stuff that you're hearing about his reluctance potentially to return, you reading the tea leaves of him not wanting to be committal, that means something too. And so, yeah, as he referenced, you can't pluck a player from the hockey tree or whatever it was that is just going to replace the production of a Mitch Marner. All I would say to people is simply that are afraid of losing Marner and that are afraid of this big step back and are afraid of the free agent market, because I'm having conversations with people like this, hockey people, fans, whatever, about like, hey, how can you replace that production and look at the free agents? And Sam Bennett probably wants to return to Florida. And if he signs here, it's going to be for $1 billion. And are we sure it's going to work for a guy that scores 50 points and is on the perfect team and blah, 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 blah. What gets lost in that to me is what he talked about in the big moments. We can lose focus. Is this team going to take a step back? Yeah, maybe in a regular season. Maybe they don't win the Atlantic this year. But maybe they take a step forward in the direction that they're trying to go, which is to be big and calm in those big moments. And honestly, again, this is reading between the lines. I know he's not calling out a player specifically. But when you're saying we went down multiple goals, and let's lump game five into this as well. Who looked calm? It certainly wasn't the guy that was screaming at his bench. It wasn't the guy that in game five was flipping a puck out on his backhand and had a turnover. And I'm not saying this to suggest this is all Mitch Marner's fault. I'm not. I think that he takes too much heat. He's obviously in the eye of the storm because he's a free agent in a way that Matthews is not or Nylander is not, right? So just try to understand that in this, because again, he does not absorb the biggest piece of the blame pie in all of it. But when you're trying to read the tea leaves of what this guy is saying and what he's putting out there, and yeah, some of it, again, workshop with PR groups and they have their preparation, all of it. But this guy had 2 weeks to prepare, and his gut thoughts, the things that came through were they've got to find ways to be calm in big moments. And I just didn't think that was Mitch Marner. And so maybe there is a little bit more reluctance from these guys to re-sign him than we thought, where it was just all in Mitch Marner's hands. Didn't love the answer on culture. Said it's just habits and that it's never been an issue. To me, the big moment stuff also does reflect your culture. And I did want to hear things in terms of like the approach with the star players and what it has been, because he's a big team guy. And he mentioned that over and over again. It's about the team success. But at times, it has felt like the individual success. Anyway, I've got a billion notes. I want to dive into this more tomorrow. I'm leaving today because I got to kick it over to Hockey Central, the Fan Hockey Show. We'll see you tomorrow.